Certainly excited to talk with one of the great country music singers of all time. Not only a country music singer, but a songwriter, an actor. He's known for writing that 1975 big song, Mamas, Don't Let Your Babies Grow Up to Be Cowboys. He also co-starred in the television series Brett Maverick with James Garner during 1981 and 1982. He is a legend, at least he is to me, and his name is Ed Bruce. Ed, it is great to have you with me.
Thank you, Al. Are you talking about me? A legend, more a rumor than a legend.
I think I can see we're already going to get started with this one on a good note. Oh, Ed, you have done so many things in the world of entertainment. It's hard to begin, so I think we'll begin from the beginning. Once again, we appreciate you being with us and talking about your story. I do want to mention your website, which is very informative, a nice website. That's edbrucemusic.com, and you're able
isn't
to...
Isn't that clever?
That is pretty clever.
I stayed up all one night thinking of that.
I kind of like what you got down here on one of the tabs. It says barn sale. I had to click on that. I like that. That's a good term to use on the website. And you can pick up all of his music right there at edbrucemusic.com. And all you got to do is click on barn sale. Ed, let's go back to the 50s. You moved from Arkansas to Tennessee. Tennessee is your home. You've been there for the rest of your life. Sun Records.
Well, actually, it was before the 50s. I was just a few months old when my dad moved us to Memphis. From Arkansas.
Now, is your dad and mom, was your dad and mom into music? Were they talented? Did that pass on to you down through the family?
Yeah, there's some music people in the family. My dad was a drummer at one time, played drums years ago. Mother sang. We'd take trips and we're riding along in the car and we'd be singing. As far as professionally, I don't know of anyone who ever made a living playing music. I had an uncle that had a music store, an instrument shop. Nobody actually professionally in the music business. It's still how it happened.
Well, so how did you come to Sun Records? Was you walking down the street and seeing the
sign?
Well,
no, I guess everybody's heard of Sun Records. It's an iconic record label. Sam Phillips started it years ago. I was playing and writing, attempting to write, first starting to write. And I just went in there. You could go in for, I don't know, $10 an hour or something like that and just put down your songs. So I took my little band in and we did a couple of things. Or I started doing something and the guy in the control room said, "Hold on just a minute." And he went back. Left the control room, they went back down the hall to Mr. Sam's office and said, "You need to come up here and hear this kid." So he did. I was a senior in high school at the time. First release was a little bit before I graduated. I don't know, within a month of graduation, my senior year.
Was that rock and roll or hillbilly rock or country music?
I guess at the time there were the term was rockabilly, which we it's kind of a hybrid of rock. I don't even know if the term rock had been invented, rock and roll, and it was kind of a hybrid. Rockabilly was I think the name itself is pretty much descriptive of what the music was. And I moved to Nashville in December of '62, lived here about a year. Went back to Memphis. Nothing seemed to be happening for me up here. So I went back to Memphis and a little bit later decided to, I got to do this. You know, I have to do this. I have to dedicate, commit to being a full-time, 24-hour-a-day working musician. So I made that move in August of '66, I think, yeah.
Yeah, but you did take on a little bit of a job. I think it was Johnny Cash that sold vacuum cleaners. Didn't you sell cars?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, my dad was in the car business.
Really?
And so I did. I was pretty good at it, too, as far as that goes. I had a lot of repeat customers.
That's what you want to do in order to make a little extra money, to make extra money to play music. And I guess you had a few royalties coming in. Was it that expensive back at that time? I guess money was worth a little bit more than it is now.
I can remember after my first child was born, I'm working at a car dealership and I'm playing a club at night, putting in a lot of hours, you know.
Right.
I did that a good bit for quite a while. Probably what really kind of established me a little bit was See the Big Man Cry, which I wrote, and Charlie Lubin recorded that and had a hit on it. In fact, it was probably his signature record after he and Ira had quit working together. That had a lot to do with my coming to Nashville, too.
So how do you come up with an idea for a song?
Hunger is a pretty good motivation factor.
Yeah, I've been there and done that. I've had to eat my own paper just because. Well, I guess, you know, songwriting can get you into other things, and that's exactly what happened. I see that Crystal Gayle recorded one of your songs, a song called Restless, 1974.
Yeah, somewhere back in there, yeah. There's a funny story behind that. I was working at night, you know, playing clubs, playing lounges, and came home. My last ex-wife and current former manager, it was, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I came home, and this was some lines were, you know, the magnet on the refrigerator door.
Yeah.
And I read that, and I thought, hey, that's pretty good. And I went and woke her up. I said, did you write this? It was in her handwriting. She said, yes, I did. And so I worked with it a little bit, you know, to tighten the meter up and all that stuff. Put a melody to it, and Crystal Gayle recorded it. I found out later at some point that she, being my ex-wife, had actually copied a poem out of a book, and I've tried desperately to find the woman who wrote this poem, but she essentially stole the lyrics, a good part of them, I tried to get something done about it and just never could. I even contacted the Library of Congress to find out, you know, who wrote that poem originally. She plagiarized it.
Hmm.
So, but anyway, it was I was dumbfounded when I found the book in the bottom of a dresser drawer.
Really?
And I was looking through it and I thought, well, wait a minute, this looks familiar. Yeah, it was familiar. It was the song.
And you're thinking, oh no.
I'm just mortified.
Yeah, these things happen, and you've tried to find her, and maybe she'll show up someday, and then maybe again not. You never know.
I even tried to get my publishing company involved in helping find the woman who wrote this poem, and the head of the publishing company says, "Oh, we don't. Let's don't do that. We might get sued or something. Let's don't." I said, golly, man, let's do right, you know. But anyway, it didn't happen. And that's that story.
Well, you went on to work at WSM television show. You was a host.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That was late 60s, early 70s. They called me. One of the producers there called me, and they were making a change. Ralph Emery had been doing that. That what was it, 6 to 7, I think, in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to make a change, or were making a change, and it may have been that Ralph was just tired of doing the show. I don't know. But called me, took me to lunch at the country club and all that, and said, you know, you want to host this this early morning TV show. What do they call it? That's original, morning show. Yeah.
The morning show in the morning.
Yeah, 6 to 7 a.m., yeah. And, you know, there's music, talk, variety, news, you know, kind of a hillbilly morning Johnny Carson thing, you know. Except I wasn't nearly as funny as Johnny.
Oh, I think you can be. You've certainly acted a lot of characters. We'll see how many of those characters we can get out of you here before we finish up later. Well, I guess one of your big songs, one of the classics, Mamas Don't Let Your Babies Grow Up to Be Cowboys.
That's probably the biggest.
That certainly is. You know, recently certified for 2 million broadcast performances. Willie and Waylon recorded that song. How did
I had the original record of it.
You did? And, I remember.
Mine was a top 15 record. And then a couple of years after that, actually, I called Waylon one day. We passed the time a little bit, pleasantries back and forth. And, I said, hey, do me a favor. He said, what's that? I said, won't you record Mamas? He said, jeep, I did about 2 weeks ago. Wow. And then, of course, Willie came in and did his piece on it. That was a thrill. It really was. It was number one for, 12, 13 weeks, something like that.
It was around 1978. Wasn't that at the time when the urban cowboy novelty was out?
Actually, I was told that song inspired, I can't remember the producer's name that did the movie Urban Cowboy, but he had read the article about the urban cowboy in, I think, Esquire magazine, and he was intrigued with, the urban cowboy mystique.
Right.
But I was told that when he heard my song, that was the catalyst that convinced him to make the movie.
And then you went on to write, this is such a great song, The Last Cowboy Song.
Yeah, Ron Peterson and I wrote that. And it was an idea that I'd had for, a year and a half. When someone says, how long does it take you to write a song? Well, this one took about a year and a half. I had the idea, and Ron and I were together one day at lunch talking. I don't know if I'd ever brought the idea up to him or not, but I did that day at lunch. He said, let's go write that. So went back to my office. He went back to his, and I hadn't been back but a few minutes, and the phone rings. It's Ron. He said, listen to this. He had a good part of that chorus in hand, and I said, okay, let's go to the farm and finish this thing up. So after a year and a half of this thing just simmering, this idea, after a year and a half, we got started on it, and we could have written 100 verses probably. It flowed so easily at that point. And, of course, the record could only be three and a half minutes at max. So
yeah.
We had to cut out about 97 verses.
I'm covering your songwriting is what we're doing right now. And we're talking with Ed Bruce. I'm sorry, Ed. I mean this respectively. I truly believe that you are a legend in all-around entertainment because of your God-given talents. And you can go to edbrucemusic.com. Then you went on, and it was around 1981, and I'm skipping just a little bit here because I'm going to songs that you recorded that were number one, just like this one, You're the Best Break This Old Heart Ever Had. I couldn't tell you how many times I've listened and sang with that song. Where did you come up with that?
Well, I didn't write that. That was a guy named... A nom vet named Randy Hatch and Waylon Holyfield wrote it.
Do you have people that come up to you from time to time and say, "Hey, Mr. Bruce, I've got a song I'd like for you to take a look at"? Do you is that what happened here?
That happens, but no. Waylon was an established writer at the time. I had met Randy at some point. Randy was in a wheelchair. He was Vietnam vet. That was, I know it was his first number one. I don't know what else he may have done after that. I just don't know. I lost touch with him, lost contact, and of course Waylon, is a an established songwriter, hit writer at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm talking about Waylon Holyfield.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
No, it was just the pitch sheet that goes out regularly, or I guess they still do it in Nashville. I don't know. I'm not in the business anymore.
Right.
But I used to have the pitch sheets that would go out regularly, and it would show what artists and what label and when they were recording. And the song was pitched to me like that. My name was on the list, and it was pitched to me.
Now, you have kind of followed the cowboy theme with your dress, with your acting, with your music. The songs that you wrote, such as Texas When I Die, big song for Tanya Tucker, and then the song The Man Who Turned My Mama On, did you specifically think of Tanya Tucker when you wrote those, or did...
Well, the first one I did, not the first one, yeah, it was the first one. Man Who Turned My Mama On was the first one that I think both of them reached number four in the charts. I walked into CBS one day to see someone. I don't even remember now what the deal was, but Billy Sherrill was her producer, and he ran CBS at the time, Epic Records, was sitting in the entrance foyer, and we knew each other, of course, and we spoke. Hey, Ed, how you doing? I'm fine, Billy. How you doing? This kind of thing, and he says, hey, you got anything for Tanya? And I said, well, I'm just right off the top of my head, I can't think of anything. This is Monday afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
I said, when are you recording her? And he said, tomorrow at 2. And I said, gosh, that's a lot of notice, man. Anyway, I said, well, what if I can come up with something this afternoon or tonight? He said, I'll be in at 10 o'clock. Just bring it to me. So the next morning at 10 o'clock, I was there. And went into his office, and I started playing that for him. Man, the turn my mama on, and about halfway through that first chorus, he's sitting there with his eyes closed, nodding his head and tapping his feet, and I said, I got him. and they cut it that afternoon. It was her, I think, third record.
Did she have to run through it quite a bit to cut that? I mean, that is absolutely ASAP. It's just, bam, right here's the song.
I don't know. I wasn't there.
You wasn't there?
No, I didn't. I wasn't at the studio.
Was you surprised of how it sounded after you heard it, after they recorded it? You know, the way they put it together, or is that how that you kind of presented it to him? Did they kind of keep in the same line of what the song was, or did they change a few things?
Pretty much. It was recorded verbatim the way I wrote it. Of course, I had no arrangement for it. I hadn't done it. It was just me and a guitar playing it for him.
Mm-hmm.
And he did everything in the studio. And nothing really that Billy Sherrill did came as a surprise. I mean, he was very creative,
mm-hmm.
very creative, and original with his ideas. He didn't always hit a home run, but who do? Incidentally,
uh-huh.
He started out with Sam Phillips.
Did he?
He was an engineer at Phillips Studio. He was an engineer at Phillips Recording Studio. Sure did.
So was it Phillips Recording Studio before they made it Sun Records?
No, it was Sun Records, and then he branched out and was Phillips. There was Sun Records and Phillips Recording Studio.
So actually, what you're telling me, a lot of the roots of rockabilly and country music from Carl Perkins,
Memphis.
Johnny Cash, and you in Memphis,
that
really is the roots of country music as we knew it back in the 60s, 70s, and it just kind of kept evolving.
Yeah, pretty much. Of course, Owen Bradley created the so-called Nashville sound, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Brilliant man. Memphis is to a great extent to blame for the music, yeah.
I want to talk just about Ed Bruce. We'll get into your acting here for just a moment, but a lot of people like to save that for last. I don't. I want to talk about you personally here for just a little bit because of what you created starting back in the 50s and we're up into the 80s at this point. entertaining, hosting television and radio shows. You enjoy, or did enjoy, I'm not sure if you're still doing it or not, but you had a lot of dogs, English setters, and then you raised Tennessee walking horses?
Did. I did.
Is that something that you kind of got into to get away from the music world and maybe have a change of mind? You know, people like to get out.
No, it was just something else that I did. I've got a picture of me on a horse when I was 3 years old, and I think there's a picture of me at about 9 or 10 sitting on an old gray mare on my website.
Yes, it is. It's there.
Okay, and I've had dogs for at least one dog for over 70 years. Now, the thing with I like to hunt. I like to bird hunt specifically, and like to follow a good dog. I had a bird dog. I had a setter, and a guy called me one time about hosting a TV show about training bird dogs. Mm-hmm. No, this was still part of the entertainment business, hosting an outdoor show about training bird dogs. I wasn't getting away from the music or from entertainment. It was just another facet of it. As far as the horses were concerned, the way that came about, I've always loved animals. I got my first dog when I was about 3 years old. 70-plus years since then, I've generally had at least one, often many. But the horse thing came about. I did back in the late 70s. Again, I did it was still show business, but I did an ad campaign for the state of Tennessee, advocating tourism in Tennessee and industrial development. Dressed me up in a buckskins and coonskin cap and all that stuff. And it was, you know, I was an image spokesman for the state of Tennessee.
Uh-huh.
Somebody with the Tennessee Walking Horse Breeders and Exhibitors Association, that's the last time I'll try to say all that together, got the right idea that the Tennessean should have a Tennessee walking horse. I got, they presented me with this beautiful big chestnut bay, kind of a dappled chestnut, flax mane and tail. He was just gorgeous, big old horse.
Mm-hmm.
And subsequently, I bought a few mares, had a foal that actually became a Grand World Champion in 1983, but I became completely disillusioned with that industry, the Tennessee walking horses, and what they do to them. Some people do to them.
I understand.
I wasn't going to be a part of that. I was not going to be a part of that. But I had horses for years after that. I just quit going to shows.
Right.
Quit supporting that industry. We had Juvenite one time had about 35, 36 head of horses, and of course we had the bird dogs out in pens. We had 10 or 12 yard dogs, just all sizes, colors, breed. There was no telling what they were. You know, they were mongrels. They were drop-offs. They were strays. They were wanderers up. And we would take them, a new one would show up, we'd take him to our vet and see if he could. He did a pretty good job of moving some of them, getting them adopted. And if they didn't, we'd spay them or neuter and give them their shots and bring them home. So we had 10 or 12 yard dogs like that, and oh gosh, 5 adult English setters, and sometimes as many as, you know, might have 2 litters at a time, and we'd have 30 dogs too, you know.
My gosh,
it was all part of what I do or did.
Right. So, if you don't mind me asking, I know you mentioned that you kind of got rid of all that. Are you and your wife just now retired, just kind of...
Pretty much.
Hanging out?
Well, yeah. I like our lifestyle now. We, about, let's see, March 26, 1997, I became an organ donor. I gave my heart to Jesus, and started doing Christian concerts. I wanted her with me, traveling with me. There was just no way. We had 270 acres and all those horses and dogs. There was no way I could depend on her to take care of stuff when I was gone. But I didn't want her to be there. I wanted her with me.
Mm-hmm.
So we just decided, let's just downsize. Let's move these horses, sell the farm. So we got a nice little place up on the mountain, and about halfway between Nashville and Knoxville. And we travel together. I've been turning down some things lately. I'm tired. I've been doing it a long time, and I don't know what they're doing now. I don't understand what they're calling country music. Some other interests still in the entertainment business.
Our conversation with Ed Bruce is not over just yet. I do want to mention his website once again, and that is edbrucemusic.com, edbrucemusic.com. Now, coming up in part two, Ed's going to reveal something brand new that he is working on, and you will hear him ask a person in his background if it's okay to tell the secret.